You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
So let us begin to explore Esther. Who is Esther? She's a young Jewish woman orphaned due to the death of her parents. Fortunately, she's adopted by her cousin Mordecai. Mordecai serves as a courier within the king's royal court. At this time in biblical history, the Jews, God's chosen people, are in exile. Jerusalem was captured and its people taken into the chains of captivity. So the Jews of the diaspora have settled and made their home in Susa. They are living as a recognized religious community, minority community, in the heart of the Persian Empire. And as an orphan and Jewish female, Esther is a nobody amongst nobodies in this minority community. With her true identity kept secret, Esther first appears in the story as one of the young virgins brought into the king's harem by her cousin Mordecai to be a possible replacement for Vashti, the banished wife of the Persian king. After living in the harem and being trained, Esther pleases the king and is eventually crowned queen. Remember, all this takes place while Esther keeps her Jewish identity a secret. Meanwhile, Mordecai has won favor by serving the king faithfully and even preventing an assassination attempt. The plot thickens, however. Somehow, Mordecai's Jewish heritage becomes known to an enemy by the name of Haman. Haman is a favored member of the king's royal court. Yet he is jealous of Mordecai and Mordecai's standing with the king. Mordecai gets into somewhat of a power struggle with Haman. Mordecai refuses to bow down before Haman, and this absolutely infuriates Haman. Haman decides not only to put Mordecai to death, but to also slaughter his entire people. And he secures the king's permission to do this. Our text today in Esther 4 picks up right after Mordecai has learned of Haman's plot.
Our reading this morning is from Esther, the 4th chapter, verses 1 through 17. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went out into the midst of the city, and he cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one was allowed to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. And in every province, wherever the king's command and his decree reached, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting, and many of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's young women and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her and command her to go to the king to beg his favor and plead with him on behalf of her people. And Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say,
"All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law, to be put to death, except to the one whom the king holds out the golden scepter, so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days."
When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther,
"Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all of the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, and you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to the royal dignity for just such a time as this."
Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai,
"Go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do. After that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish."
Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Beloveds of the Fountains, I hope you know that we are in the process of building up a new world for such a time as this. It is indeed a privilege and honor that I stand before you today, the first Sunday after the closing of the Desert Southwest Annual Conference, in which I was ordained an elder in full connection. Had someone told me 10 years ago that I'd be pastoring in the UMC today, I would not have believed them. But God has called me for such a time as this. I guess God has been up to something for this time, a time in which so much of our lives have been put on hold due to the COVID-19 pandemic, a time in which LGBTQIA folks in the UMC have been faced with the reality that reaching their promised land has been put on hold. At such a time as this, when our history, our past, has seemingly become our new or renewed reality. You see, I understand that there are some of you who assumed you had lived through the worst season of racial tension and discrimination in this country. I recognize that some of you thought you lived through the Jim Crow era, civil rights, women's lib, and gay and lesbian rights movements. But yet, there's the unfortunate reality that some gathered here today have seen the church and our country at war with itself their entire lives due to issues of colonialism, racism, xenophobia, sexism, and homophobia. In other words, some of us have been waiting for the transformation to come in our church and in our world for way too long. So what is our call as those who proclaimed at our baptism that we would resist evil, injustice, and oppression in whatever form they present themselves? And what about the transformation of the world, that we might live into the reality of a realized kingdom of God? Today's text in the book of Esther situates us in the story to aid us in finding our way forward for such a time as this. So what is this story about? Well, right away we learn that the leaders of the Persian Empire, Haman in particular, had an agenda, a racist agenda to exterminate all the Jews. And we might know a little bit in this country about racist agenda to exterminate a group of people. We might know a little bit as United Methodists about a homophobic agenda to exterminate queer people from the church. So, with that being said, we should be able to place ourselves inside this story. I need you this morning to place yourself inside this story. Fountains, the people of the fountains, Esther, you are facing genocide of yourself and of your people. You are being given a difficult task. Esther, you are to choose action or to choose to be silent when your people need you the most. Esther, you've got to choose, brother, to confront your husband, your spouse, the king, the power that be, risking death simply by entering the room of a king without being asked to do so, or to do nothing and to continue to live a plush life as Queen Esther. Esther, you can choose to plead with your husband, your spouse, the king, the power that be, to stop this ethnic cleansing or to do nothing. Esther, you can save yourself and your people, or you can do nothing. So secondly, this narrative is about choice and about free will, isn't it? God always gives us choice, free will. Since the beginning, God has given us free will. And then we reflect on Esther's life, who she was, where she had come from, and then we read verses 13 through 15. It could easily come across that Mordecai is scolding her for her self-preservation. In other words, we might take it as Mordecai calling her out for being selfish. More important than any other portion of this text is the phrase, "For if you remain silent at this time." For if you remain silent at this time, help will come to your people from another place. Who knows? Perhaps you've been called for such a time as this. Here, Mordecai inspires Esther. He catches Esther's attention by cluing her in to the bigger picture, the broader context of who she is. He essentially says to her, Esther, although you feel like you have arrived, you have not made it to your promised land yet. Just because you're in the king's palace and living a lavish life, you have not made it to your promised land yet. Don't forget, you are still a Jew. Mordecai is saying here, Esther, your life is not simply about you, but about us. You did not make it to the palace for yourself, or by yourself, or because of yourself. So don't get comfortable yet. We, a collective, we have not arrived at our promised land yet. And if you remain silent at this time and focus on yourself, eventually, relief will come to our people. But you and your family in your father's house will die. In speaking these words to Esther, Mordecai draws Esther away from the needs of self to a sense of connectivism and into the Ubuntu spirit. Yes, into the Ubuntu spirit. I am because you are. You are because I am. He reminds her she had been chosen for this time to set aside her own interests, goals, and desires, to let go of her own ambitions and face their common enemy full on. And how does Esther reply? Well, we know. Esther is inspired. No, in fact, she's compelled to take control, to act quickly in this crisis, to save her people in the midst of the threat of death. She is obediently faithful. She is a team player. And Esther goes on, of course, to be the savior of her people. She was indeed called for such a time as this. She was called to risk her life and her legacy with no guarantees of positive outcome, just on faith and on goodwill. That's the for such a time as this that Mordecai challenged Esther to accept. And that's the for such a time as this that God also sets before you and me. So what do we learn from Esther? What is Esther teaching us here? Well, first, there's a call to not be silent when a crisis arises amongst our people. When we see harm being done, when injustice is present in our world and in our churches. And over the last few weeks, we've all heard the stories about people all over the world reacting in protest in riots and marches due to the George Floyd case and many others. To be quite honest with you, I really wrestled with my own response in the first few days after George Floyd's death. Because quite frankly, I was scared. I was scared about being hurt, arrested, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was scared of COVID. And then across my television screen flashed a protester sign. Silence is violence. Silence equals violence. And then another, riots are the voice of the unheard. And then the kicker, another famous quote from Martin Luther King Jr. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of a friend. With that, I instantly felt convicted, like I should be doing something. I took that as my call to stop sitting on the sidelines and to become a part of the solution. So wrapped up in Esther's call is Esther teaching us to use our voices. Esther's message is a message to encourage us, to give us courage and the power to speak freedom for the captive, freedom for the oppressed. Freedom is the call to protect life via the act of love, passionate love. To speak words of freedom is to bring all to a place of wholeness, abundance, and liberty. The call to speak of freedom and to speak freedom into existence for others challenges evil, destructiveness, oppression, violence, decay, and it defeats death. And indeed, that is the good news. Because next, Esther models for us how we are to live out our call. And that is by putting the community and God's kingdom building work ahead of our self-seeking ambitions. Imagine that. Imagine that. God has given each of us jobs, careers, resources, education, and influence. God has opened and doors and giving each of us opportunities for God's kingdom building purposes. God didn't create you, me, us just to sit back and live a lavish life not focused on the world around us. No, the more resources and privilege we have, the more we have that belongs to God. And as Luke 12:48 teaches, to whom much is given, much is required. Because you see, God placed us where we are today to literally be a part of building up a new world. The Dr. Vincent Harding, who assisted in the writing of many of Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches, was a professor at ILF, at the ILF School of Theology when I was there. In his experience walking beside and working with King, he was inspired to write a song to the tune of "We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder." And that song is, "We Are Building Up a New World." Vincent Harding charged up us at ILIF to take seriously our responsibility at building up a new world, to take seriously our kingdom responsibility at building up a new world. God built us to be in community. And Esther could have easily continued to live the lavish life in the king's palace and let whatever happened to her people just simply happen. But she would have certainly missed her kingdom calling, and an entire nation would have been lost. We would have been lost, saints. We. Instead, an entire nation was grateful for how Esther responded to Mordecai's request. Their lives were spared. How many lives matter to you? Whose lives matter to you? How have you, how are you showing it? I entered my call to ministry at a time when I was mad at God, the church, and the church for all the harm I had experienced as an openly queer layperson who faithfully served the church. But God said, Kim, stop whining and crying about how horrible the church had been to you and go and be a part of changing the church, building up a new world, because you are not the only one who's been harmed or who's being harmed by the church. And that's how God convinced me of my first for such a time as this moment. That's how God convinced me to leave behind my church, my family, my career, my middle class standing, and to go and do God's work. After being a school counselor in Las Vegas for 10 years, I had witnessed LGBTQIA youth being harmed by the church. It is not just by chance that a year ago, I was asked as the only queer person to sit at a table with some of the most well-known traditionalists, centrists, progressives in the UMC in order to hash out our differences around full inclusion of LGBTQIA persons in the United Methodist Church. It was really hard, ugly, grimy work. I took great risk at sitting at that table as an openly queer clergy person, not yet ordained. But I knew that it was not about me. It was God's call, the call God had placed on my heart years prior for such a time as this, because the time is now. The time is now, saints. My life, my ministry has been filled with taking risks because of the at-risk. Fountains, you are being called to live as if your loved ones' lives were at risk, as if those nearest and dearest to you are the ones facing extermination. Extermination from the church because they are LGBTQIA. As if those you love are being fed the crumbs from the table of a crumbling church. As if your loved ones are at risk. As if they're the ones facing execution in the streets because of the color of their skin. So many black and brown lives could be spared today if all would choose to step up to service, to speak out against racism and police brutality. So many queer and trans persons' lives and ministry could be spared today if we would use our resources and political influence to find a way forward to create the church that Jesus died to build. Esther is teaching us here that our call is to act on God's watch, God's time, and not ours. Esther got the call from Mordecai and responded urgently. Was this call timely? No. In fact, it did not make any humanly sense to Esther, I'm sure. Yet Esther was obedient. She used her privilege. She sacrificed her status for the sake of her people. How many times have you received a call to take part of something that would have caused you to make a sacrifice. And you said, oh, no, no, thanks. This is terrible timing. Or perhaps you said, I've done all that I can do. I'll just leave it to the next generation to figure out. When we respond in such ways, we are prolonging our collective suffering. We are prolonging the kingdom reality that God so desperately wants us to experience. We are prolonging suffering, injustice, and oppression. We're prolonging it.
Courage, people.
We have been called to be the ones to free the oppressed, to recover sight to the blind, and to bring about love, peace, and justice today for the transformation of the world. Today, in the here and now, who are we waiting on to do our work? Let us not delay kingdom building up a new world any longer. Let God's kingdom come now on earth as it is in heaven. We have been called for such a time as this because, saints, the time is now. Because the time is now.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.